second part of Ofir Ilzetsky's interview with the Israeli composer Arya Shapira. The first part of this interview can be found on the Radio Halas archives. Just click the info button and follow the link.
Which brings me straight to our next piece, which is also a political piece, but is very interesting for me for another reason, which is this is a piece that mocks other musics. This is a piece that I remember when listening to with you the first time, we burst out in spontaneous laughter, which is something that doesn't happen regularly when listening to music, especially not contemporary music. And the reason this is that this piece is using stimulus from other pieces, namely The Twilight of the Gods at first. This is by Wagner. The first movement of Bruckner's Fourth Symphony. Then we have the first movement of Brahms' German Requiem. And finally, we have Karl Orff, the Carmina Burana. And these pieces, of course, are noticeable by style, of course, but sometimes, especially Brahms is noticeable, are put in there as a sort of joke by you, Arik Shapira. What are you trying to portray? Why are you trying to mock this music?
Well, the first idea was to make fun of German romantic music. And I did it because I must admit that I don't like Wagner's music. It's a manipulation meant to be heard by Germans only. It's meaningless to me. And I dislike Bruckner. He's a primitive composer. And I don't like Brahms because he's too fat. The music is in bad taste. It's too much for me. I prefer Schumann or Tchaikovsky. If we are talking about the 19th century music. And of course I dislike Carmina Burana, which is a real fascist Nazi piece meant to be heard by in Nazi Germany at the time, before the war, in the happy 30s. And it was composed and performed in 37. That's the real German taste.
So to you, this represents something political for German culture. This has something to do with,
of course,
your relation to the past or the Holocaust or something personal.
And that's the second reason, because just to express my idea that anti-Semitism or the lethal anti-Semitism of the Nazis is not really Nazi. It's deeply rooted in German culture, very old. It starts many generations ago, and we can't say Hitler is responsible for the Holocaust or the Nazi Party or Nazi Germany. It's the German culture responsible for the Holocaust.
So these were only the brutes who actually manifested this in force, but in fact you think it starts much before.
Oh yes. It was very clear during the 19th century German philosophy, and even before, and the Nazi Party and Hitler and all the gang is only the loudspeaker or the muscles which executed it's a very old German idea to annihilate Jews all over the world, and that's why. And I say, in this piece, I say, if German culture is responsible, so is music, German music.
Because you say that there's something inherently despicable or disgusting to you about the music itself, but you don't see this in other representations of this music in the 19th century
of
when I think
not.
Of Debussy, contemporaries of these composers.
Yes, of course not.
No.
No, not even Beethoven, who was German.
Right.
Or Schubert, he was Austrian, he was not German. Or Schumann, I like very much Schumann, but I dislike Brahms.
Interesting. This is, of course, a subject that's interested you for years because, of course, the Holocaust, for one. There is a very famous piece that you'd written before. It's taking you years and was performed in Berlin, actually, which is called Letzte Briefe aus Stalingrad, Letters from Stalingrad, Last Letters from Stalingrad.
Yes. In this piece, I stated, so to speak, that the German language is responsible for the Holocaust.
In the language as manifested in these letters, these letters from German soldiers back to, from the front in Stalingrad back home.
Yes. And those letters were banned by the Gestapo. They were not delivered to the families because you couldn't find Heil Hitler in the letters, just the opposite. But still, the letters are so German. Mm. For example, a soldier writing a letter to his father and refer to him in third person.
To his father?
Yes, I cannot. And he's about to die of hunger or freezing to death in Stalingrad and still keep those stupid manners.
The ideas, the notions of culture.
Yes.
Very interesting.
It's unbelievable.
So you see this manifested in the music that you've used for Schneewittchen.
Yes.
And you feel a need to ridicule it, which I find very interesting and very funny, of course. What I'm interested is something that you've mentioned before, and this is about also opposing in your own composition vast structures and great contrasts and of highs and lows, soft and loud. Of course, all of the things that make this music that you've used for Schneewittchen so loved throughout the world by many, many people. This is obviously something that you dislike in your own music, but I wonder, is this also a communication going out to other composers? Because many people do already accept the music that you've used, the German Requiem, Bruckner's Fourth Symphony. All of these pieces are considered masterpieces, and a lot of composers much younger than you or from the same generation find this music as very inspirational. Is this a message to them in a way?
Yes, of course. People in Israel don't like it.
They don't like this piece?
Yes, because I make fun of Brahms, who is a sacred cow in Israel.
Indeed.
Or Karl Orff.
Indeed.
Amazingly, he's very popular in Israel. And so is Bruckner, and so is Wagner.
He's not heard on concert podiums in Israel, but I think that he's regarded as almost a god amongst composers.
Yes, it's fantastic. Jews admire Wagner. I cannot understand it. It's lousy music, if you ask me.
But indeed, your lack of admiration for Wagner has nothing to do with the politics. It has to do with the actual composition.
Of course, yes.
It's very interesting.
It's awful music. I can't listen to it. I remember I told myself, well, I'm an intellectual, I'm a professor, and I can't dislike a composer from the 19th century. I listened to Tristan and Isolde, and I was bored to death. I couldn't stand it.
It's a very long opera.
Yes, I listened to half an hour, and then I closed my disc player. I couldn't listen to it.
There was once, as we mentioned before, a performance of some music of yours in The Hague, and on working on Letzte Briefe aus Stalingrad with a singer, I remember the singer finding this piece a very romantic piece. He read the letters literally, and I think that the irony of the piece, the irony of you as a person, was completely lost on this person. He believed that you were trying to depict something harsh, something horrible about these people. He thought that you were being romantic about the soldiers at the front. I think he misunderstood the whole idea of the piece. And this makes me wonder, of course, people might look back at this music and say, it's so Israeli. Somebody from Europe, for instance, might say, this piece is so harsh, it's so Israeli, it's so abrupt, it's so dry. It's very much like the characteristics of Israelis that have become very infamous around the world. And of course, in the news, somebody else might actually come to you, Arik Shapira, and say, your music is a manifestation of hatred towards Arabs. It's a manifestation of this very chauvinistic and militaristic culture that is seen for Europeans in the news. What do you think about that? Because your music is very Israeli.
Yeah, I will give an example.
Please.
Letzte Briefe aus Stalingrad was performed in Berlin.
Yes.
And after a month I got 12 reviews of the piece.
Uh-huh.
10 reviews written by Germans wrote that it is a anti-war piece.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two old critics, Holocaust survivors, Jews,
mm-hmm.
and they wrote that it's a piece concerning the Holocaust.
Hmm.
Well, you can't expect a American Japanese singer to understand my meaning. Simple as that.
Well, there it is. Schnee Wiechen und die vier Bären. This is from 2008. Also made with the courtesy of Guy Barash in his studio here in Haifa.
It's not courtesy, it's patience.
It's the patience of Guy Barash. Schnee Wiechen und die vier Bären. Arik Shapira.
Bye.
Schneewittchen und die vier Bären, Snow White and the Four Bears from 2008, Arik Shapira. A wonderfully comical piece, I think. I hope this is not missed out on anybody. The next piece that we'll listen to relates also to the solo pieces, as this is a piece for solo instrument and tape again. There is a different kind of dynamic. This time the solo performer activates the tape, or is it the other way around?
What piece is it?
This is Digital Variations for saxophone and tape.
The saxophone initiates or triggers through pitch to MIDI converter samples of saxophone. And the variation lies with the sampling sound.
Right. This is performed by Albert Begger, who is a colleague of yours in the Haifa University and is known here in Israel as a jazz performer, improviser. Did you use him specifically because of his connection to jazz, because of his ability to improvise? Is that the reason that you wanted to use Albert for this piece?
Yes, of course. Mainly for the simple reason that he's very wild.
In his playing, you mean?
Yes, he's very hectic in his playing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I prefer him to, well-established, educated, academic player.
Mm-hmm, interesting. You've mentioned to me before the program began that this piece was, of course, recorded here in your studio. And you've mentioned that this was in 2006 during the Second Lebanon War.
Yes.
Was this a reaction, a musical reaction to current affairs? Do you deal with such things?
No, it's a purely aesthetical piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done my share or I've done my duty to write a piece against the First Lebanon War.
Which piece is that?
Left Right.
Yes.
And that's that, because I think that the First Lebanon War is very significant in Israeli mind, in Israeli psyche, so to speak. While the Second War is, it's not war, it's a punishment, it's a silly war. What can you expect of politicians? and it doesn't deserve a peace, this war. And it has nothing to do with the war.
No. I think it's interesting to note the fact that when listeners from abroad, I can tell this from my own experience, is that I'm always asked, frequently asked about my connection. People seem to always analyze my pieces as connected to affairs, current affairs, let's call them, in Israel, political affairs. And I must always say that they're not connected. I am much less political even than you yourself, Arik Shapira, in my own music. And I wonder, when people come up to you, confront you about these issues, do you have a problem with that? Do people actually confront you about, let's say, Israeliness in your music?
Well, I believe that each composer must be provincial, so to speak.
What do you mean by that?
Write, express the spirit of his place, of his time, of his country. Well, Israel is hectic, restless, nervous, uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
Why write elegant music like my colleagues? I don't understand it.
Do you think that such a thing as Israeli music exists?
What music?
Israeli music.
It must be restless, nervous, unstable, uneasy, not elegant, rough, abrupt, brutal, like Israel.
So a piece written, if I were tomorrow to write a cantata for orchestra and choir based on a biblical text, would this be considered an Israeli piece for you?
No.
No.
It's European piece. The sheer fact that it's in Hebrew doesn't mean that the piece is Israeli. Sorry.
Well, let's let our listeners decide whether they think this next piece and the ones that we've heard is an Israeli piece. This is Digital Variations for Saxophone and Tape. Albert Begger, of course, plays the tenor saxophone. This is from 2006. The tape was edited here in the studio?
Yes, with Guy Barash.
With Guy Barash as well.
Yes.
Digital Variations for Saxophone and Tape. Arik Shapira.
Thank you.
digital variations for saxophone and tape. This was Albert Begger on the tenor saxophone, piece from 2006, Arik Shapira. Reaching the end of our program, I would like to mention that there is a piece which we'll hear an excerpt of right now, which is called Akedah. This is probably the oldest piece that we're going to listen to today. It's actually composed a long, long time ago and never performed, and it is actually about to be performed for the first time this year.
Yes.
In September.
I wrote it in 82. Mm-hmm. It was commissioned by Israeli Festival, Israeli Museum, and the Theater of Jerusalem, but it was not performed due to many reasons. Though they commissioned it, they refused to perform it because it was a bit expensive, it's also a political piece.
How so? What is the material used?
I took biblical texts from Genesis 21st chapter, telling about Hagar and Ishmael. And the secret of Israeli relations to the Palestinians is written in the Bible. Go to the desert, take a little water, and get off our eyes. Just get lost. That's the first movement. The second movement is the sacrifice of Isaac, where the complex, a very deep Israeli complex, a Jewish complex, is rooted in this story.
So the piece is through text through the Bible, or does it go further than this?
It's the biblical text,
verbatim.
And the third movement is the Holocaust,
represented by which text?
By Gidon Klein's Marterstrasse.
Interesting.
It's both in Yiddish and German. I believe that those two languages can serve a piece of the Holocaust the best way. And the fourth part is resurrection, the Zionist story of Israel, and the piece we are going to listen to is an introduction to a rock tune, sung by a rock singer. And the text is from Ben-Gurion speeches.
It's different speeches taken into the text.
Yes.
So sort of these, because Ben-Gurion was really known for these fiery statements regarding the state of Israel and the people of Israel.
Yes, he used mainly nouns in his speeches. He never used the verbs. For example, it's a compilation of expressions of Ben-Gurion. Well, he was a great man, but a lousy orator.
this is in a way an oratory, because this is a huge piece. This is for a large ensemble, for choir.
Yes, it's not that large. It's only 33 performers.
Still big for your kind of ensembles.
It's big for me.
Yeah.
It's 17 performers, a mixed choir of 12, and four soloists, including the rock singer. That's all. 33. And in this piece, which is electronically done.
So the part that we're going to listen to is in fact the fourth movement, called Resurrection.
Yes, I took more than 100 songs, commercials, partisan songs, holiday songs, and Zionistic songs, military songs, and so on, just to make a fun of it, to laugh at it, to mock at it.
And do you see you're trying to create a connection between the history of Judaism as represented in the Bible, then through modern times, Zionistic movement, and even, let's say, modern popular Israel?
Yes.
You see an immediate connection. So this is something in the same way, for instance, that you spoke about the Holocaust and about the connection of German tradition that goes back to Martin Luther, maybe even. You see a connection between current Israeli culture, the way that it's manifested in Israel, and the past of Israel.
Oh, yes, of course. As I've told you, our present Israeli relations to the Palestinians is as Abraham attitude towards Agar and Ishmael
in the Bible.
Yes, in the Bible. The complex of being a sacrifice is expressed in the Bible in Isaac story.
And nice to notice that the fact that you always make fun of these issues, you are never the fire and brimstone kind of prophet that one would expect you sitting in front of you hearing this. In the piece itself, it's very comical, it's mocking, in fact, all of these
the first part dealing with Ishmael and Agar is very modern and alienated. And the music in Isaac's story is more elegant and more flowery, colorful music. The first part is only the brass and the choir and the electronic process, real-time a process. And the second part, I use the whole orchestra with different electronic gear, so to speak, so on.
And so on. So, but this will be performed in September. Do you have an exact date?
September 21st
this
in
year
Haifa,
in
yes.
Haifa.
Yes.
Wonderful. So we look forward to this. This is a piece that's been awaited for more than 20 years.
27
years.
Yes, mind you.
Very nice. Let's listen to a part of Akedah now. This is the opening of the fourth movement called Resurrection. It is performed by students of the music department of the Haifa University, the voices of these students. And the electronic manipulation was again done with the help of Guy Barash?
No, I did it myself.
Oh, okay.
Here
in the studio.
Yes.
Well.
And it was done with the very significant help of Avi Elbaz.
Aha.
And Guy Barash.
Of course, with whom you've also worked prolifically in the past.
Yes, many years. And in this section, in this part, I make fun of the abominable Israeli habit, common habit of communal singing.
Interesting.
I just hate it. it's so sticky, I can't bear it.
So you've made it your own.
Yes.
Fantastic. Here it is for you then, Akedah, the opening of the fourth movement of Resurrection.
Thank you.
Akeda. That was the opening of the fourth movement, entitled Resurrection, from the piece Akeda, which will be premiered after 27 years of impatient waiting. This was performed, of course, by the students of the music department of the Haifa University and accompanied by electronics. Those of you who are interested, on the 21st of September, this piece can be heard in Haifa.
Yes.
I'm sure that there will be publications, as this will be a part of which festival?
It's called Israeli... it's a project taking place each year during September, dedicated to Israeli music. It's called the Festivity of Israeli Music.
Aha.
In English.
Fantastic. Well, this brings us to the conclusion of today's program. I wish we had more time, because I feel that there's never enough time to dedicate to this wonderful music of one of Israel's most extreme and provocative composers. I will end with a piece called Leftovers. This, for no apparent reason, other than the fact that I feel very connected to this piece. I have personally loved this piece for a long time. And this is a piece that hasn't been performed since its premiere, as it is not a written score. It's in fact a piece that was improvised with you and the musicians in a studio, and hence received one very good recording, but has not been performed since. This is a piece for a mixed ensemble of Western and Eastern instruments. And when I say Western and Eastern, the Eastern instruments would be oud, sas, geitar, jambush, darbuka, tablas, congas, and the Western instruments, for which the congas can be considered a part of those, are the cello, viola, violin, harpsichord, and electronic manipulation. This is a piece that is also a sort of criticism, I should say, of a trend that was very popular in Israeli music. Not anymore, but probably when you were a young youth, this was a trend that was very popular in modern composing, modern music composing in Israel, namely the trend of how should we call this, Mediterranean composing. Can you say something about that? What was this exactly?
The founders of Israeli music immigrated to Israel, and it was not Israel at the time, during the 30s, and they brought, and they understood at least that they must they can't use European music, that the music from Russia or Germany or Austria or Prague or France must be forgotten, put aside, and then they conceived an idea, Mediterranean school, a music based on Eastern melodies, developed in Western technique, and played, performed by Western educated academic performers. And it sounds awful. It's the big tragedy of Israeli music, because they all sound like the fire, because they took Spanish melodies, Jewish Spanish, which are close to original Spanish music,
right,
like the fire does. It's it's a big joke, and I wanted to teach them a lesson. If you want Oriental music, use the right performers,
or the right instruments.
Yes, and I took the Western instruments are close in sound to the Oriental instruments. Violin is came from here.
Right.
During the Crusades.
Right.
And so is the cembalo. It's a santur, actually. And that's the idea. And it was hated.
The piece was not accepted well.
No, by my colleagues, because I exposed their invalidity, or their wrong ideas, or wrong attitude towards music. You want Oriental music, write Oriental music. Don't write a sonata and using Oriental melodies, or use the right performers. That's the idea.
Very interesting. Well, Thank you very much, Arik Shapira.
Thank you, Ophir.
And I hope for many, many more years of composing, of wonderfully critical music from you. It's interesting to note that you're not a young man anymore and still one of the most critical people on the Israeli classical music scene, which I think is a wonderful thing.
And, thank you.
And I hope that many more people will take this path. This is me, Ophir Elzetsky, saying to you, our listeners, goodbye until our next time on An Hour. And I leave you with Leftovers by Arik Shapira.
Thank you. Thank you. An hour is an anechoic transmission brought to you by Radio Halas.